From NPR News, this is Weekend Edition. I'm Audie Cornish. When Gene Roddenberry created the TV series Star Trek, the suits at NBC advised him to, quote, lose the Martian. They were talking about Spock. But Mr. Spock went on to become the most beloved half-alien in network history. As part of our ongoing series In Character that explores famous American fictional characters, NPR's Netta Ulaby wondered what makes Spock so fascinating.
Fascinating.
Four syllables and one arched eyebrow. That's Spock just as much as his pointy Vulcan ears. The first time actor Leonard Nimoy said the word was in an episode where the USS Enterprise crew faced a strange, sinister entity.
It was an object, a large object of some kind that seemed to have these amazing powers to get in our way, whichever way we turned, and there was some frantic activity.
It's blocking the way.
Quite unnecessary to raise your voice, Mr. Bailey.
The energy was very high on the bridge, and the captain was shouting orders.
So Nimoy shouted out his next line with the same energy.
Fascinating. And the director, bless him, said, be different than everybody else. Do it as a scientific curiosity. And I got it. And I said, uh-huh. And I said, fascinating. I think in that moment, a very important aspect of the character was born.
Fascinating. 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 Fascinating.
I think one of the things that Gene Roddenberry wanted Spock there for was to observe the human condition, to make comment on it.
D.C. Fontana was a writer for the original Star Trek series that ran from 1966 to 1969. She says that fascinating conveyed interest, skepticism, but layered deeply in there, wonder. Leonard Nimoy found fascination in Spock's status as an outsider.
Gene Roddenberry, when he hired me to do the role, gave me a very interesting dynamic to work with, in that Spock's mother was human, his father was Vulcan. He was sort of a half-breed.
When you were 5 years old and came home stiff-lipped, anguished, because the other boys tormented you, saying that you weren't really Vulcan. I watched you, knowing that inside, the human part of you was crying.
I think that's one of the most interesting things about Spock, which was what is hidden. It's not what you get, but what you're not getting, what's hiding, what he's hiding, what peeks out occasionally.
What peeks out occasionally are emotions. One of the series' favorite gambits was to have Spock lose his mind, always under the influence of an urge to mate, a flower spore, or a germ that eliminates defense mechanisms, as in an episode called Naked Time.
I'm in control of my emotions. Control of my
It's a struggle we all face.
Henry Jenkins is a humanities professor at the Massachusetts Institute of Technology.
Are we driven by our emotions? Are we driven by our intellect? And how do we reconcile those two things?
I'm in love with you, Mr. Spock.
One of the things Jenkins studies is Star Trek fan culture. He says Spock's struggle makes him an unlikely sex symbol.
Spock is sexy for a large number of people, male and female. Many of the female fans that I've studied really are attracted to the emotional depths of this character.
I can't lose you now, Mr. Spock. I can't.
I have a responsibility to this ship.
This character who, like many men in our culture, represses outward signs of emotion, who tries to hold it all together no matter what, but who seems to be sensitive, to be sensuous at certain times, seems to have a deep affection and even passion for his relationships to Captain Kirk. This character then became the embodiment of the mystery that is masculinity.
You hide it, but you do have feeling. Oh, how we must hurt you, torture you.
I'm in control of my emotions.
Star Trek debuted during a turbulent moment in history. The Vietnam War, the feminist movement, and Spock somehow spoke to the times, says Jenkins. It was rare then, he says, to see a TV character embody two very different cultures.
In that sense, Star Trek looks ahead to a society we live in today where so many people are mixed race, mixed cultural background. I've been thinking about that a lot lately, looking at Barack Obama. There's something in the mythology that surrounds Barack Obama that seems to me echoes some of our assumptions about Spock.
Which are?
That he's someone who's been able to bridge worlds, and that particularly he's indebted to a philosophy of Idik, the Vulcan philosophy of an infinite diversity an infant combination, that someone who is of mixed race is seen as being capable of understanding both races and indeed being more open than someone who comes from a fixed cultural identity.
As it happens, Leonard Nimoy supports Obama for president. MIT professor Henry Jenkins says Nimoy's performance as Spock was a marvel of sensitivity and nuance. But he's looking forward to a new actor playing Spock in an upcoming movie. He says, like Hamlet, Spock is a character for the ages.
We can imagine seeing hundreds of different actors play Hamlet, and indeed the richness of Hamlet is seeing the differences and different interpretations of that character. With the new movie, we will for the first time see Spock as a character larger than an actor.
Fascinating.
Neda Ulaby, NPR News.
Spock has been one of the hottest names on NPR's In-Character blog, where our web community has compared him to Margaret Mead, a Tibetan Buddhist, and Tolkien's elves. You can join the conversation and nominate your own favorite characters at npr.org/in-character.